unoperated vessel out of Wrangell, and then our kids also fish on two separate vessels. Did you want me to declare both at the same time? I'll keep going then. And the second potential conflict of interest is I'm the executive director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization that broadly represents the seafood industry across the state. We work generally in areas of research and development and have been providing information to the seafood industry about issues related to COVID.
Okay, so I don't see that there's an economic direct link that will be to you personally in either of those. So I will go with it. There's no conflict on either of those. Does anybody want to question that judgment? Hearing no one, anybody else want to declare conflict? I will declare that I'm a part share. Oh, sorry, I'll pass the gavel over to Vice Mayor Gilbert. Vice Mayor Gilbert, I'm a minority shareholder in my son's fishing business. Both my wife and I have a minority share in that.
Pending assembly disapproval, I find you have no conflict of interest.
Okay, I'll grab the gavel back and we will continue on then if no one has anything further for conflict. And we will turn it over to City Manager Von Bargen for a COVID-19 update.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've got a list in front of me, so you'll forgive me for looking down here. And apparently I need bifocals, so excuse me. There are a number of things going on, lots of updates that have happened over the last few days. Our understanding from what the governor reported in his Friday briefing and what we heard on conference call today is that there is likely going to be an extension of the interstate travel quarantine requirement. The Department of Health and the governor's office believe that the Alaskans have done an outstanding job of flattening the curve. We only had two new positive cases in the state today. And so they really believe that in state we've done a good job, but they are concerned about letting people in from out of state. So we're likely going to see an extension of that interstate travel quarantine requirement. That being said, there's significant work in play to start reopening the economy of Alaska. As I'm sure you're seeing on the news nationwide, that's a big issue. Our understanding also is that we will very soon, and perhaps even at tonight's briefing that the governor is giving, be hearing some guidance regarding the opening of retail. And so we will be able to report back on that here in the next couple of days, but stay tuned for more developments in that regard. The mayor may want to speak on this because he was on a call on Friday and then on the same call I was on today, but the governor has indicated that he really wants to work with the local communities in determining what is appropriate for opening and how we go about doing that, because it's obviously not one size fits all. I'm trying to think who mentioned it to me today. I can't remember. I think it was Jamie Roberts said the governor indicated he was going to treat Alaska like its own country, because we have so many different variables and distinct unique characteristics from location to location around the state. It's not going to be one size fits all as we move back through things. So going through my list here, the thing I want to make sure I reiterate to the community and to the assembly is that the reason why the curve has been flattened is because Alaskans and Wrangellites have done such a great job in social distancing, sheltering in place, and folks coming into town self-quarantining as necessary. And then that personal hygiene stuff, wearing a mask when you're out, washing your hands, doing all of those things. And so I understand that there's going to be fatigue as we continue to move on as time goes on, and especially if there continue, hopefully, to be no cases in Wrangell, it's going to seem like we don't need to continue these practices But what's keeping us safe is that everybody is doing these things. And so I really wholeheartedly encourage people to continue those practices. So my thanks to Wrangellites for continuing that on. As was reported at the end of last week in a meeting, the independent fishing vessel, the proposed mandate for independent fishing vessels, was sent to the AG's office. I actually got an email just moments ago, minutes ago, with a copy of that proposed mandate, and I have not had a chance to look at it, but I will be reviewing that as soon as we are done here. And so my guess is it will not be very much time before that goes out for prime time. And our understanding today from Tom Koloski at the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management at the state EOC is that once those mandates are issued for independent fishing vessels, they will not be required to submit plans anymore. They will be required to follow those mandates. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but hot off the press here, hopefully I'll know very shortly. With that being said, my understanding is that these mandates were also going to include some information from marine yards. I have heard that information is not going to be detailed enough, and the expectation is that local harbors and marine yards are going to need to come up with their own requirements. And the governor, again, the mayor may want to speak to this. The governor has indicated that industry and communities need to be working together, working on what is necessary in local communities. And so in that regard, I've done a first draft of an ordinance that would amend our local code related to the marine yard. And I emailed that out to the assembly, so feel free to take a look at that in a KYP. I am trying to put together a meeting for the next couple of days with stakeholders to review that so that we can come up with something that works best for industry and for making sure that we're keeping our people, the visiting boat owner operators and the operators within the marine yard safe. Alaska Department of Fish and Game issued a notice at the end of last week regarding sport and personal fisheries. And I need to just read that. So their notice says sport and personal use fishing in the state of Alaska will remain open, consistent with published regulations during the 2020 season, subject to compliance with state of Alaska public health mandates. And they've provided a handful of five guidelines, essentially. Conduct your fishing activities as close to your home residence as possible. Local mandates may be authorized. Their recommendation is that you totally provision your trip from your point of origin, rather than having to do that in the community in which you're going. Practice social distancing while sport or personal use fishing. And they highly suggest anglers wear face coverings, as was suggested in the health alert. So that came out from ADF&G. The state understands that this is quickly going to be the next wave of people moving around the state. And by that, it's going to be a much bigger issue in the area of Alaska that's on the road system, folks from Anchorage heading down to the Kenai Peninsula, folks from Fairbanks and the interior heading down to Valdez. They're sort of saltwater playground areas. But it's also a concern for us here because we do have a handful of people that own recreational boats, personal use boats in our harbor that are coming from like Anchorage coming into the community. So that's something that the state is understandably going to be issuing some guidance, some additional guidance on as well. But as was indicated on the phone today, they're dealing with the alligator that's closest to the boat. They're doing triage as they can. And so the first thing they're dealing with right now is processing and commercial fishing that's getting underway. Mr. Mayor, did you want to talk about testing numbers?
We'd had a question on the daily update that I've been doing on Facebook, which is basically nothing more than just letting people know that there wasn't a case of COVID. It's given folks an opportunity to ask the odd question. And I did have a question regarding our testing numbers and an inconsistency that was taking place. So unbeknownst to me, and I think Lisa just found out on Friday, but we had been living under the impression that testing numbers were not being released by the state. And as a matter of fact, the Department of Epidemiology had gone so far as to issue guidance not to release testing numbers to communities because it can create a panic if all of a sudden you have a bunch of testing numbers that are happening. You know, people think, well, you're testing more because all of a sudden you have an increase of 10 that day. Well, that may just mean that they added a new symptom like that wasn't previously there that now they're testing for. So it doesn't necessarily mean there's a greater incidence, just can mean a variety of things. So we were working with that. And then it was pointed out to me by somebody on Facebook that, hey, the state is publishing your numbers. And Dr. Zink last Wednesday shouted out, Rangel, that we had a 1.9% testing rate, one of the best in the state. But our number on the state website itself said we'd only tested 22 people in our entire town for COVID-19. So I turned to my wife and said, is that reasonable? And she laughed and said, not even close. So when I looked further into it, the state hadn't put down the state numbers. They put down the private lab numbers, but not their own numbers. So it was giving a skewed vision of our testing rate. So all of a sudden we went from having one of the best testing rates in the whole state to having one of the worst testing rates by percent of population. So we reached out to Letha this morning and spoke to her about it. And we said, since it appears that the state is releasing the numbers, why don't you release the good numbers? And they've agreed to do that. So once a week now, Search will be releasing their testing numbers. But as of yesterday, we have had 69 total tests, 61 of them are negative and 8 are pending. And so the once a week, they'll release those numbers and we can see, which gives us an even better actually percent ratio for tests.
It's 2.8%, Mr. Mayor.
2.8%. So Dr. Zink should be really proud of us tonight and give us an extra shout out. That's important to the community. And it's important because it goes to show that we have no cases here. And it's not because we're not testing. It's because we're doing the right things. And so we know that moving forward that they're going to, and Lynn spoke to me about this last night or the night before, that has to be a part of opening up. Testing has to be a part of that opening up. And they don't have access to enough of those tests yet to do asymptomatic testing. So once we can do asymptomatic testing, that's going to be kind of a bit of a game changer in the whole thing. So we just don't have enough of those tests yet, but we're getting there. So that's good news.
Mr. Mayor, to follow on to your comment about asymptomatic testing, also on our call today, Tom Kolosky indicated that the state is working on a robust plan for testing because they recognize that that is a key to getting things opened up again as fully as possible. They were not at liberty to talk about what any of those details are, but they did say that that a robust testing plan or scheme is being discussed. So we'll wait for those details. Sorry, I muted myself temporarily. I just wanted to let the assembly know that we, with regard to the voluntary plan review, we've received 19 total plans. 17 have been reviewed, 11 are complete, and 8 are awaiting more info or revisions. And we just want to say thank you to those people who have agreed to, you know, take a look at things and provide additional feedback to us. So we're very appreciative of those people and encourage folks to continue to reach out to us and submit those plans so we can be as helpful with guidance as we have been so far. And part of what our plans reviewers are doing is looking at the state criteria and helping let folks know if they think a criteria has been missed or if they need to add something to make it a little bit more robust. So I hope we're being helpful in that regard to people who are submitting plans.
Lisa, Ann has her hand up. Ann, did you want to ask a question?
Oh, I did. No, I was just, my question was going to be in regard to this testing plan. I had a conversation today with some people here in town whose businesses have been shut down due to mandate. And their comment was that until we can get a very comprehensive testing situation in place, they don't see any way they can open up their businesses again, because theirs is a one-on-one service. You know, and they're worried that a lot of their clientele are older people. You know, somebody comes in that is asymptomatic, doesn't have any symptoms at all, gets, you know, sits there and has their service done, and then they leave, and then the next person that comes in is an older person with an immune situation. So they were just wondering, and this is good news that at least the state is starting to look at a massive testing program, because there are some businesses that just can't.
And that's definitely that, you know, a small business is complex because is there a liability question there for the small business? But it's even more complex for larger businesses, because one of the things that hasn't been spoken about, and there's a bit of misinformation out there, but as far as I know, there's no way workers' comp will cover workers for COVID. So if you wind up with COVID and you're working at a processor, or you're working at City Market, or you're working wherever, workers' comp was not going to pay for that, because there's no way to directly trace that to an on-the-job injury. It's the same as years ago, I had a staff member who got pneumonia working in the crossings program, and it was community acquired pneumonia, and we couldn't even get him covered, even though he had only been out with the kids. And so this is, you know, they don't do appendicitis and heart attacks and pneumonia. Right. That's a big part. If they do start to cover it, and the interesting thing is, just think if you had an outbreak in your store with 50 employees and you have 20 go down, what's your workers' comp rate going to be next year? Can you imagine? So that's, and in the president's briefing today, he clearly stated that they were looking at putting in additional safeguards for employees, which of course leaves the employee kind of hanging out there a bit more. But it's a big issue, and one that the state's going to have to try and address for sure. Yeah. Sorry, Lisa, I didn't mean to cut into you there.
No, absolutely not. Thank you for those comments. Right now, we have extended the closure of city offices to May 1st, and I guess depending upon what mandates the governor passes down, we obviously want to set the bar with regard to set an example. And so if it sounds like the governor's mandate is going to be to open retail places, which essentially many of our offices, our storefronts sort of are, City Hall, the Harbor office, et cetera, we may be doing that. So we'll fall in line with whatever the state is. In that regard, I just want to mention that I think there is some confusion that Wrangell has special ordinances or requirements out there beyond what the state has. We do not. The only thing that we have in place right now are following the state mandates. We have asked for some voluntary compliance with some things, but that's all it is voluntary. And so when it comes to opening up businesses or reducing the hunker down order or any of these, you know, our shelter in place things, really all of that is the state at this point. We don't have anything more restrictive in place. And although I, as I mentioned, send a copy of an ordinance regarding the Marine Yard to the Assembly to take a look at. And there are some things in there that are a little bit more restrictive. So take a look at that, certainly. Especially related to the Marine Yard, Assembly Member Decker brought it to my attention that there is some information out there that we are not accepting people in the Marine Yard. I double checked with the Harbor Master today. That is not correct. They are allowing anybody to come. They have reached out to those people who we previously asked to delay or had previously said we had concerns with them coming because they were coming from areas with community spread, to advise them that they are able to come. The only thing that is being asked right now is that they submit a plan to the state and voluntarily submit a plan to us. But if the independent fishing vessel mandates come out, they won't even have to do that, which is why having something in place for our Marine Yard will be important. But we are not turning anybody away. And in fact, we've got folks coming over from Petersburg, as I understand it, in the next couple of days to do some work. So I just want to be clear that the Marine Yard is open for business. And I think a couple of other things, Mr. Mayor. I had an opportunity to speak with Esther Ashton from WCA, and they are checking into their ability to do a mandate as a sovereign tribal entity, and they were going to get back to me. We have not, as a municipality, asked them for any specificity, but if things should go in a bad way for us here in Wrangell, it would be nice to know if they have the ability to do something independent, as Assemblymember Gilbert pointed out in one of our previous meetings. The other thing that was brought up by Assemblymember Powell was the unified command, and do we, as a local government incident commander, have access to the unified command? The state sees the unified command as the three entities within the state that are working together: the governor's office, administration, the Department of Health and Social Services, and the Department of Emergency Management, Homeland Security and Emergency Management. So those are the representatives on the unified command. And it was brought up at our meeting last week, what is the local representation there? And there was not a clear answer given. And admittedly, so many of the questions that are being asked of the folks at the state level are things that, you know, are first time requests. And so they don't have a lot of clear answers, and they have to go back and try to find things out. That was actually the case today on a call that we were on, but we are asking those questions and trying to figure out answers to those things. And I think, Mr. Mayor, that is the update that I have.
Great. The only couple of things that I might add for the assembly is, one, that we did strike up a committee and a task force for economic development, and sort of to advise the assembly of potential paths forward for what the city can be doing to help spur economic development as we come out of this COVID crisis. And we met with Kim, Lisa, and the Economic Development Director, Carol Rushmore, and put together a committee. And that was sent out to everybody on Friday. I don't know, did we get a tribal representative yet, Lisa?
I don't know the answer to that question. Kim, have you heard back from anyone?
I know Carol had sent something on to Esther, but we were just waiting for a response. So
yeah, Carol was out of the office today, so maybe we'll hear from her.